Hi, I'm Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. You know, religious relics have a tendency to go missing, be it the Ark of the Covenant, or the original Omphalos stone at Delhi, or the Spear of Destiny, or the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. It just seems like a lot of these things exist in this weird limbo between real and imagined, and we never can really pin down where they came from or where they went. One of the most emulated but least understood of these relics would be the original Benben stone of the ancient Egyptians. Now, I have a hypothesis about where it may have came from and what its purpose might have been, and it differs a little bit from the mainstream historians, but I do think that mine's a little bit better. Well, of course I think that because it's mine. Bear with me and we'll see if I'm right. In the version of the creation myth the Heliopolitans had, the primordial mound was the Benben stone that came through the earliest flood waters, and it was part Ra Atum, the sun god. As this was a creation myth, this ended up being symbolic of all of creation and of life and rebirth and resurrection. This symbolism ended up in every pyramid, both in the foundation as a primordial mound, but also in the pyramidion or capstone that was put on top of each one. The handful of those that survive are actually the best analogs we have of the original Benben stone. It's quite possible that it's missing due to the fact that it was considered a potent symbol of resurrection and rebirth. What we do know is that the ancient Egyptians considered it very important. It's in a lot of their writings about resurrection, a lot of the pyramid texts and those kinds of things include talks about it. But it's never really referenced in any other way. It's never spoken of as an item or as a thing. It's always referenced in incantations and spells and things like that, so we don't really know much about it. Perhaps it was a more closely guarded secret in their concept of resurrection. You know, this is one area I'll agree with Graham Hancock on. They do seem to have very much of a technological approach to this whole afterlife thing. I'm not saying I believe that their whole technological approach worked. I'm just saying that they just seem to take a very, like, from the embalming process to the way the pyramids are designed, from the exterior to the interior, just seems very methodical, very weighed and measured, very straightforward. This is how it's done, period, end of story. The whole point of this technology culminated in the ascension of the soul up into the Duat, which is the kind of reddish, pinkish portion of the sky in sunrise or sunset, to meet the stars in Orion's belt, which were equated with Osiris. From there, they were said to live forever in the stars. Now, you'll notice both solar and stellar themes are present in this, and if you read the pyramid text or the Book of Coming Forth by Day, which we know here in the West is the Book of the Dead, you'll see the same thing, that frequently it goes back and forth from solar themes to stellar themes when it's speaking about the afterlife. As a matter of fact, on one of the surviving pyramidions that we still have, we read this. Higher Ra is the Ba of the King of Upper and Lower Egypt, Nimrate, as the height of Orion as it joins the Duat. Ra Horkti, as he makes the firm, the son of Ra, of his body, Amenhotep, who is the midst of the northern starry sky, and Neith, who is content concerning it. Now, I believe the reason that we see that these two themes mixed together is because the deceased was supposed to ride the sun's rays up to the starry sky. And that's why the time to do that was during the sunrise or sunset. That's when the rays are easiest to see, is like a pronounced line, which would kind of appear like a road that would take somebody into the sky. Of course, this is just a guess on my part, but it's being based on the fact that there's two sides there to this that seem solar and stellar. And astrologically speaking, the vernal equinox is the time when you measure the age that you're in, the 2,000-year cycle. Like right now, we're either in the age of Aquarius or in the age of Pisces, depending on who you ask. And this convention is really old. It's so old it goes back before recorded history, it looks like, because some of the earliest symbols that we see associated with astronomy tend to depict the age of the era. The Sphinx is carved from an outcrop of bedrock that faces due east, and this is the kind of thing that would imply that it is an equinoctial marker. It's the kind of thing that we do see in other places in the world, not exactly like this, but we do see similar things like this around the world used as equinoctial markers. Frequently, when something natural is used, it's something really large, like a mountain, and they'll go for a second sunrise, where the sun rises, goes behind the mountain quickly, and then pops out behind it again, so they get two sunrises consecutively. Something small like the Sphinx doesn't really allow for that. The Sphinx would fall more into something where it would be crested at the top by a peak, something you see like an Angkor Wat, or in what we have today with the Sphinx. Now, the pieces of Earth that naturally align with the sun and make these second sunrises or peaks at the top of them are frequently considered very sacred by the people around there. And in ancient Egypt, there would be an even higher chance of that if that happened to be a, island poking through flood waters, for example. From about 11,000 years ago to 5,000 years ago, the Sahara Desert was in a green period, and as a result, the Nile River was much, much larger. There was a lot more rainfall. Some of the models predict that back then the Sphinx would have been on an island that you could wade to, and that it wouldn't have been the Sphinx, obviously, then it would have been an outcrop of rock. Given that they venerated the first mound of earth to poke through the flood waters, and that if you were standing there on the vernal equinox and looking due east, you would have the sky-ground dualism, it isn't a stretch to think that that place would have been extremely significant. As a matter of fact, I think it was more than just significant. I think it was their primordial mound. I think that this is the place that they associated with being the birthplace of the universe and all creation. Now, in my mind, that natural outcrop of rock most likely had a point on it that was used to align on the vernal equinox. And that point probably got broken off on purpose or by accident at some point. And this was the Benben stone. This was the model for the Pyramidions and for the pyramids themselves on down the road. Now, it being broken off had two effects. Number one is now the Pyramidion, the Benben stone, is a portable object. It's no longer affixed to the outcrop of rock. Two, that outcrop of rock no longer does what it did in regards to the sun, so you kind of need to get out there with some hammers and chisels and recarve that thing to make it what you wanted to have a spiritual significance. Perhaps the reason we don't find very many Pyramidions in the record is because at one point there was only one, the Benben stone. And if Pharaoh passed away, they put him in his tomb, and on top of that, they put this Benben stone, and when prescribed amount of time passed, their technology was complete, they took the Benben stone down, stuffed it in the Holy of Holies or whatever, and then waited for the next one to die. That's just speculation, but I can't really imagine if there was an actual Benben stone. I can't really imagine, like, one Pharaoh putting it on his tomb, and the next Pharaoh coming along going, like, that's the super powerful resurrective thing, and I'm leaving it there. That don't even make no sense. He would just grab it and stick it on his. And that would also explain why it ended up being missing, because if it was considered that potent of a symbol of power, it would be something targeted by people in that nation and people in other nations. And when Egypt started getting conquered or anything like that, it would be like Ark of the Covenant, worthy of grabbing and taking to another nation. Now, building a necropolis with the Sphinx right there would actually make a lot of sense if that was the first place of the first time, right? If that's the primordial mound that came through the waters to begin with, and it's considered to have all these resurrective properties, and it aligns with the sun, there's your solar rays, and then you put Orion's belt on the ground in the form of the pyramids, and now you've got your sun and your stars, and you've got it all right there, the big resurrective machine for their technology. To me, that makes a lot more sense than the other hypothesis that I've seen, is like it was meteoric iron was the Benben stone, and that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me because it just doesn't seem to jive with the rest of the mythology and whatnot. Now, of course, we can't prove any of this for sure. This is barely what you would call a hypothesis. This is pretty unfalsifiable. We're just guessing here. It's about as unfalsifiable as the assertion that it's meteoric iron. But it is interesting to me to kind of speculate and to kind of look at the things that we do know and to put the pieces together and say, hey, it is possible that this is where the Benben stone came from. Anyway, if you enjoyed this, click the buttons, because I make more videos like this sometimes, and all the time, actually. And thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe. See you next time.